Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Payne and Pendergast, the world's biggest pregame show. 100 hours of Texans Chiefs coverage, and we are getting there, man. We are getting there. We just passed the 37 hours away mark last hour. We're 18 minutes away from the 36 hours away mark. Good stuff here. Good stuff. The NFL season getting started right here on Sports Radio 610 with you. We had Mike Martz on yesterday, the architect of the greatest show on turf. We'll get to him in just a minute, but there was an interesting exchange in the war room on Sunday where we had a bunch of former players, including my co-host Seth Payne. We had some defensive players in there early in the show. We had offensive players in there late. Stanford Rout and James Ahedibo were in there with Seth Payne. Landry Locker was hosting, and both Stanford and James made a big point about as defensive backs being scared of speed, which Kansas City has a lot of.
In my early years in Oakland, Randy Moss always taught me, he said, Rout, he said, the guys who are going to give you problems in this league are the big ones who can run. And sure enough, those are the ones who gave me the most problems. The guys who had really good hands and ran really good routes, they didn't give me too many problems. Doesn't mean I was able to just blanket all of them, but they didn't give me the biggest problems. It was the guys that could stretch the field, like the Will Fuller, like the Brandon Cooks, because they can take the top off the defense and they bring a different dimension to the game.
The other thing is with guys that, you know, catch underneath routes or catch and run guys, you always have the philosophy, hey, just get them on the ground. Mm-hmm. Just tackle them. But you cannot give up those home run plays, which just kill a defense.
All right, so that's the Texans. I mean, trading Hopkins, and then you're starting to build around Cooks and Fuller, Cobb to a lesser degree, Stills. You're going for more of that look. You're going for more of the speed look. Mike Martz was on with us yesterday. He was the offensive coordinator and then the head coach for the greatest show on turf in St. Louis. He kind of sees what the Texans are trying to do with their approach.
I think it's a good move. I really do. I think increasing your speed in numbers – particularly. I'm a big Cobb fan. I loved him when he came out and all the different things he can do with the football. It does remind me of Ozzie King a little bit, but I just think that the more ways you can spread that ball around the speed instead of isolating a player, it just makes you much more versatile and much more difficult for the defense to deal with. Speed always is hard for defense, always. Speed trumps size, and if I had a 5'9", 10 flat 100 meter guy, I'd much rather have him than a 6'3". Guy that's with average speed. You can go by people and put them on their heels.
Those are two former defensive players, Seth, and the head coach of one of the greatest offenses in the history of the game. Essentially saying, if you Mad Lib names into that, they're kind of saying they'd rather have Brandon Cooks and Randall Cobb and the rest of this crew than whatever the Texans were doing with Hopkins the last couple
of
years.
I think that's the immediate knee-jerk thought you have when you hear that. And because I had the same thing yesterday. I actually thought about it after the show. Because something there doesn't quite add up, and I think it's this. What a lot of coaches will also tell you is that, yes, speed is awesome, but you also want to have different types of receivers, almost like a basketball team, because then you can attack, just like a basketball team has different size guys and they can attack people different way, except for the Rockets, obviously. But traditionally with a basketball team, you have different body types. With a receiving core, you can do a whole lot with different body types. My question would be this. if the reason that you got rid of DeAndre Hopkins was, oh no, Lord Almighty, we just can't pay all this money to all these guys. Well, look, you could have easily added a whole lot of speed to that offense and still had DeAndre Hopkins there without paying a whole lot more, because part of what you're paying this year is David Johnson, a guy who in a lot of ways replicates what you already had in Duke Johnson. You had speed at the running back position right there, and you added it for way, way, way above market value. David Johnson's contract is awful. So you could have kept DeAndre Hopkins, forget about David Johnson, or maybe because you didn't even utilize Duke Johnson when you had him last year, and then bring in Randall Cobb, and you have Kenny Stills. There's more speed out there. There's more things you can do. So I find myself very ambivalent right now. I'm excited about all the speed they do have on the field, but I'm just getting annoyed at people giving the Texans the benefit of the doubt like it was some kind of impossibility to keep DeAndre Hopkins and add more speed to the offense. That's what your GM is there for, to figure out problems like that.
Yeah, well, it's almost like the pressure is on Bill O'Brien, and I guess to an extent Tim Kelly, since he's the one calling the plays now. They almost have to look different on offense, don't they, Seth? They almost have to be taking more deep shots down the field. And by the way, that fits Deshaun Watson's skill set pretty well. He's about as good as it gets throwing the ball accurately down the field. And I feel like they almost have to use David Johnson in a way where, at least statistically, he looks more like Marshall Faulk at the end of the year. And we actually asked Mike Martz about that, the key to having a versatile running back. And David Johnson is one of the better pass-catching running backs in the league. Bill O'Brien calls him the three-down back. Here's Mike Martz on the importance of the running back with what the Texans want to do.
You know, when you change personnel defensively, they see that, of course, on the other side. There's certain limitations. There's certain things you do with some back that you don't do with others for a lot of teams. Now, we were never that way. And to have a guy that can do anything, that is good in protection pickup, he can pound it inside, and a terrific receiver, you can move him around. The flexibility and the threat to the defense, that they've got to cover the whole field, so to speak.
And he said one thing right there that nobody ever likes to talk about, which is pass protection by running backs. Yeah. But it is so vitally important. It really, really is a big deal. And look, that doesn't make Steven Jackson Marshall Faulk by any stretch of the imagination, but It does add an element to some of the things they can do. If you have a running back there that you think is a great passing threat, okay, that's great. Or a great receiving threat, that's great. That puts the defense in a little bit of a bind. But if he's no good in pass protection and he can't, you know, read blitz and pick up blitz and see some of the keys, then it's a little bit easier to counteract that and offset that with the blitz. I think David Johnson does offer an improved guy in pass protection over Duke Johnson, and I think it gives something a little bit extra to Deshaun Watson in terms of a resource to keep himself extending plays, to keep himself safer in the pocket. That part I'm cool with David Johnson. That's one of the things that are very valuable in bringing in a veteran guy, even if he's past his prime and not the same guy he was in 2016.
Here's Bill O'Brien yesterday on David Johnson.
You know, I don't get into bounce back seasons. I mean, this guy's been a very productive player in this league. I mean, he's an excellent football player. He's had a really good training camp for us. He's an even better person. He's been a great addition to our locker room, very professional. I think it's really good when you have all these guys in your locker room that the young players can really look towards as great examples. And so, you know, look, David's going to go out there. He's going to play a good game. He's going to play hard. He's going to try to do everything, you know, the right way. And hopefully that's something that is that our team is looking for. And you know, he'll continue to do that.
Over under 22.5 touches tomorrow night for David Johnson, Seth.
Oh, I'll go extreme under on that.
Extreme under, okay.
Yeah, I think and I think part of that's COVID related. I think they don't have two similar running backs on the roster for no reason. I don't think. I think that they want to keep guys healthy, and I think that David Johnson is a guy who's been dinged up a good amount the last couple of years, and with no preseason and no normal three, I think they have to be as careful as possible.
Okay.
This is like rolling a pitcher out there this season, where ideally in a normal world where you didn't have to, where things weren't so crazy, you got to just take it easy a little bit at the beginning.
I think part of you saying extreme under, to me, baked into that would be that you're just not maybe confident in how the Texans are going to do. Because Seth, I think if it looks like the Week 6 game from last year, they're going to be running David Johnson quite a bit to kind of possess the ball and own the clock. Like 22.5 touches is 17 carries and 6 catches. if they win this game, I think that's a big part of the formula is David Johnson.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, did you say touches, or carries?
Touches.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking carries.
Touches. Sorry, yeah, I should have been more clear.
22 carries like he was going to be a bell cow or something.
No.
22 touches. I still think that's an over. I think they want to spread the ball out. Now,
you think it's an under, you mean?
Yeah. I think that there's, just like with Duke Johnson last year, they're going to pick and choose their moments mm-hmm. where they think that this is a game for this guy to be the receiver and what have you. So I think it's going to be a miserable year for people that use Texans players as fantasy players. Unless, like if you got somebody, if you're dialed in and you're seeing an opponent that's really weak against running backs or something, go for it.
Yeah.
But
guess who I got in my draft last night.
Yeah.
David Johnson. Yeah.
So. Remember last year? Do you remember we were out at that charity event last year and like four different people in a row came up to you and me and said, hey, what the hell's going on with Duke Johnson? I drafted him this year because they were supposed to be using him all the time.
I remember. With the COVID, I knew we wouldn't have to be out and about as much this year. So, giving these bombastic opinions.
I'll say the yards after the contact are the biggest thing I want to see out of David Johnson.
That's a good one.
In 2016, he ran really, really hard.
He did.
These last couple of years, he's been athletic. But, you know, remember a couple of weeks ago, McClain kind of surprised me because he presented David Johnson's stats from 2018 like David Johnson had a great year in 2018 because he had 940 yards rushing. And he did it at 3.6 yards per carry.
That's the thing. He hasn't been efficient. Yeah.
It was not. And his yards after, like, he wasn't running the same way that he was beforehand. He's still athletic. He's still plenty athletic. I just want to see a hungrier David Johnson.
He has not been somebody that is worth trading DeAndre Hopkins for since 2016. That's the bottom line. Any numbers you bring up since 2016 in any of those three seasons is spin. That's it. Or you're just not digging into the numbers enough. He has not been efficient nor good since 2016. Now, he's looked good in training camp, and I'm cautiously optimistic he can be good with this great quarterback and a cohesive offensive line. But we got to see it with our own eyes. But I think he's going to get plenty of work. So we'll find out tomorrow night. That'll be the test, the Texans and the Chiefs. Right here as we roll on with the world's biggest pregame show. 100 hours of Texans Chiefs coverage. John McClain is going to join us at 8 o'clock. Be listening at 7:45 for the keyword to win a Brandon Cooks autographed helmet. And speaking of that Week 6 win over the Chiefs, 8 o'clock tonight, a Texans radio special presentation, commercial free, the Week 6 win over the Chiefs from last year. Maybe that's the blueprint to get it done this year as well. Which Texans assistant is under the most pressure this season? That's next. Payne and Pendergast here on Sports Radio 610. Bill O'Brien... I'm sorry, J.J. Watt, as we roll on with the world's biggest pregame show. 100 hours of Texans-Chiefs coverage. Bottom of the hour, Carrington Harrison, host for our sister station, which also happens to be 610 Sports Radio in Kansas City, will join us, and we will get a preview from the Kansas City side of things.
It happened again yesterday where one of their listeners tried to text them, but texted us. They must have Googled the text line for Sports Radio 610. And it happens about once every week or two where somebody just starts assaulting us on the text line for something, and I'm so clueless. And I forget the lessons I've learned that, like, oh, wait, no, this person's from Kansas City, not from Houston.
Yeah, we'll have to tell Carrington to control his listeners. Hey, get your listeners under control. Tell them to get the right number, man. Come on.
The only thing is they're the ones, I feel like, I don't think that's representative of all their listeners. These are the ones who are dumb enough to not realize that they're texting the wrong station.
Yeah, but we'll go at Carrington as if all of them are that dumb, because they're the enemy this week. Yeah, they're the enemy. J.J. Watt, not the enemy. J.J. Watt is our friend. He is a superhero here in Houston. He is excited for his defensive coordinator and good friend, Anthony Weaver.
I'm very excited. I'm very happy for Weave. I've loved working with him here so far through training camp as a defensive coordinator. The one thing I'll say about Weave is that he's been preparing for this for years, not just this year. You know, he's extremely smart. He's extremely intelligent. He works unbelievably hard. He knows the ins and outs of everything that he's trying to do on defense. He understands the game extremely well. He understands the players, how to motivate the players, how to get the guys excited, how to keep them motivated throughout an entire camp and now going through the season. He's got great ideas and he's got a great plan, and I'm really looking forward to executing that. I'm very happy for him. He deserves this. And I'm excited for our defense to go out there and execute the vision that he has for us.
Seth, I don't know what the expectations are like around the city for Anthony Weaver. I do know the expectations on this station with a lot of us are pretty high for a guy who's never coordinated a defense before. And he's very well thought of. You can hear, JJ is not alone in his effusive praise for Anthony Weaver. I think he's got the hardest job of any of these assistant coaches. Does that equate to having the most pressure on him among the O'Brien assistants, either position coaches or coordinators?
I would say yes, except that after Vrabel had the worst scoring defense in the NFL, he even got himself a head job with the Tennessee Titans.
That's a good counterpoint.
He's widely regarded as one of the
really good counterpoint
rising stars in the coaching community. I think charisma goes a long way, and Weaver's got a whole lot of charisma. Now, look, there are certain things about that season with Vrabel. I mean, he lost J.J. Watt. He lost Whitney Mercilus. My counter to that would be that there were 31 other teams in the league who didn't have J.J. Watt or Whitney Mercilus who were better scoring defenses than that year in 2017. Oh, that was 2017. Yeah, they went 4-12.
Yep.
So, but I think he's under a lot of pressure. Now, it's not pressure to turn this into an awesome defense because – It would be a miracle if Weaver takes this defense and turns it into an awesome defense. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it would be somewhat miraculous because there are serious questions on the back end. There are serious questions on the front end in terms of pass rush. So if they do really well, it's going to be because A, the players are coached up really well on their technique, and B, the defensive coordinator's play calling puts all these guys in situations where they can both achieve and also where their weaknesses are minimized. And I think Anthony's got the ability to do that. But it'll be a successful season for me if I see him take this defense to, you know, if they're a top 10 defense, that would be an extreme success. And it would give you a lot of hope moving into next year that with some changes and some improvement and with some guys growing that they could actually be a genuinely good defense.
They were 27th in DVOA last year. And just to speak English for everybody, they were 27th in efficiency. They were the 27th best defense in the stat metric that I think you and I believe in greatly, Seth, that DVOA metric. Defensive efficiency. So they were 27th. They obviously have to be better. I think a reasonable expectation is middle of the pack, 16th, something like that. And I think, dude, if they get into the top 10, let me back up. Reasonable expectation with a healthy J.J. Watt for 16 games is middle of the pack. I think the ceiling is what you talked about, Seth. If they're ninth, holy crap. If they're ninth and Deshaun Watson is healthy this year, they will compete for a bye in the first round of the playoffs. Like if they're the ninth best defense with Deshaun Watson playing 16 games, this team's going to go 12-4 or 13-3. I believe that.
You kind of go...
Because you'll be a top 10 on both sides of the ball.
It used to be the rule in the NBA, you know, you had to be a top 10 defense if you wanted a chance at a championship. That was before the Cleveland Cavaliers with LeBron James existed.
Right.
But I think that with this team, it feels like that. I don't think they're going to be so prolific on offense that you could be a middle-of-the-pack defense and still be really good. I think it would have to take that. Now, so Anthony Weaver is one X factor for that. I think Jacob Martin is another X factor, Charles Amenihu, and then on the back end, Lonnie Johnson, obviously. I think Garyon Conley getting healthy, I really think that Garyon Conley was poised to make a lot of improvements this year if he was healthy. So hopefully they can bring him off IR at some point. Those are all the biggest X factors.
If it's not Weaver who's under the most pressure on Bill O'Brien's staff, who is it then?
I think that's an easy – well, I was about to say Tim Kelly, but I don't know. Like I want to believe that Tim Kelly's going to have autonomy. I'll believe it when I see it. Danton Lynn. I think Danton Lynn, the secondary coach, another guy who at some point, if the Texans do really well on defense this year, it's going to be because the secondary outperforms their expectations. And Danton, his father is Anthony Lynn, the coach of the Chargers. He's got that pedigree where I think people would start talking about him as, hey, maybe this guy's a defense coordinator or something. Because Anthony Weaver he's still coaching the defensive line, Anthony Weaver is. He's known as a front-line guy. I think he's going to rely heavily on Danton Lynn really getting that secondary right and coached up, maybe even more so than a typical defensive backs coach would, where usually the defensive coordinator is the back-end guy.
That's a good one, and I'm going to tell you why. First of all, Weaver brought him up twice in his press conference earlier this week, at least twice. He brought up Danton Lynn as a guy who he's been doing a great job coaching up the secondary, like voluntarily brought him up twice. Seth, I could tell you as someone who was at those 10 practices as well, that Danton Lynn, if the practices were full attendance, I promise you, Danton Lynn would have been the guy that all of us in the media would be going, there's a future defensive coordinator right there, because he was nonstop coaching. You know what I mean?
When Vrabel was that same
hands
way,
in the clay the whole time, yapping. You can hear him. He's like constantly coaching. So I don't know if that means anything as far as how good the secondary is going to be. I'm just telling you, I'm just trying to give you the inside scoop as to what this guy seems to be all about.
You know who was like that? Not that I would wish this on Danton. Richard Smith.
Richard Smith, I was going to say Richard Smith.
Coaching loud all the time in everybody's face the time.
Yeah.
You're shouting in the wrong direction. Hey, Richard, every time you point the finger in the wrong direction, there's three pointed back in the right direction.
That's a good one.
At you.
All right. We'll roll on here. Headlines coming up in about 20 minutes or so. That'll be when we give you a code word for the not Whitney Merciless, the Brandon Cooks autographed helmet today. It's a Brandon Cooks autographed helmet. Keyword will be coming down around 7:45 when we get headlines started. But up next, we will head to Kansas City and get the perspective from Kansas City on this season opener, Texans-Chiefs, as we're in the midst of 100 hours of Texans-Chiefs pregame coverage, the world's biggest pregame show. Carrington Harrison, who hosts the afternoon show on 610 Sports Radio in Kansas City, our sister station up there, will join us, and we'll get the Chiefs' view of the world next. Man, that sounds so good. Less than 36 hours away from kickoff of the 2020 NFL season, and it's really cool that the Texans get to be a part of that. They travel to Arrowhead Stadium to take on the defending Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs. Joining us right now to help give us the Kansas City perspective on this big game on Thursday night, he hosts afternoons on our sister station, 610 Sports Radio in Kansas City. Carrington Harrison joining us on Sports Radio 610. Carrington, great to have you on the show. Appreciate you getting up with us here on a game day eve. Before we get into chatter about the Texans and the Chiefs, Seth had a quick request. Seth, do you want to put your request in for Carrington about the texters?
Oh, yeah, Carrington. I would say like once every couple weeks, we get some angry text from somebody who's just furious about some topic that we're not even talking about. And I'll admit to my own idiocy here. It takes me like three or four text exchanges before I realize, oh, this person's trying to text Sports Radio 610 in Kansas City. And I don't know. I don't know if it's just your dumbest listeners who can't figure it out, or if this is like a good cross section of your listeners. Somehow you gotta do some search engine optimization or something to get your actual text line out there so they find the right text line.
I mean, the exact same thing happens to us in reverse, so I know exactly. But I normally can tell because the area code always says 713, so I'd always know, all right, this isn't for us. But no, sometimes that trips me out, too, because they'll mention something. I'm like, we're not even talking about this. And I'm like, oh, okay, I get it. All right, I got it.
Yeah, see, I'm embarrassed because it takes me a while to figure out the area code thing. I just my whole medulla oblongata is enraged by that point, and I'm not thinking clearly.
That's funny. Carrington Harrison joining us on the show. All right, Carrington, so the Chiefs win the Super Bowl last year, and now I don't know what the storylines are in Kansas City throughout the year, but I know that nationally – it immediately turned into not just they won the Super Bowl, not just the Chiefs, will they defend their Super Bowl? It's how many Super Bowls will the Chiefs win with Patrick Mahomes as their quarterback? Look, there have been 14 straight Super Bowl champions who haven't been able to repeat. Why is it that the Chiefs will be the one to break that streak?
It's funny. It's like you listened to the open for the show yesterday, because one of my points was, the NFL is, when everybody is zigging, you should be the one that's zagging. Think about how many times the predictions in the NFL that everybody gives the same prediction and the opposite happens. And right now, everybody is so high on the Kansas City Chiefs, especially in Kansas City. I think there's probably three reasons that people are so optimistic about the Chiefs this year. I would say, number one, they have the best player in the NFL, and I think that's pretty obvious. I would say, number two, they returned 19 of 22 starters that started last year in the Super Bowl. And I would say number three, at least in Kansas City, there's just not much of a respect for the rest of the AFC. I think Kansas City thinks Baltimore's good, but not on their level because they've never beaten them with Patrick Mahomes. And Chiefs fans don't have respect for any other team in the AFC. Not Houston, not Buffalo, not Indianapolis, not Tennessee. Like, there's no other team in the AFC that Kansas City fans look at and think that they can match us. So I think that's what creates the confidence the Chiefs fans have that they're going back to the Super Bowl.
You know, that's interesting, and I feel that way a little bit right now, but then I remember the regular season last year, and I got to think that most Chiefs fans weren't feeling that way midway through last season. What changed between then and now? Obviously the Super Bowl, but what substantially changed between then and now?
I mean, the defense just got tremendously better, and they started getting healthy. I mean, the early part of the season, the Chiefs just has so many injuries. Like, we'll just take a look back to the last time that the Chiefs and Texans played each other in the regular season. Frank Clark only had one tackle in the game. He was clearly banged up. Chris Jones didn't play in that game. And Tyreek Hill was coming back from injury. So the Chiefs were just really banged up the early part of the season. They played Tennessee in, like, week 11 last year, and they lost that game. And then after that, they didn't lose a game the rest of the season. Their defense got healthier. Their offense got healthier. Frank Clark started contributing. Sammy Watkins started to produce, and they just really took the next step. So I think there's a confidence that they can continue what they're doing. I'm with you where I kind of look at the Chiefs and I'm like, well, history tells us that they're probably not going to repeat. But if this offense is what everybody thinks it's going to be and their defense can give you, you know, a top 10 defense the way that they were last year, I just don't see how any team in the AFC stops them.
Barring injury to Pat Mahomes or something like that, what would upend them, do you think?
I think it's probably Tyreek Hill or Tyrann Mathieu. I think it's one of those two. Like, their defense sort of works because Tyrann Mathieu can do everything. Like, right now, their two corners are Charvarius Ward and Rashad Fenton. If your listeners are like, who, I completely understand. But they're counting that Tyrann Mathieu can be their third corner for the first 4 weeks of the season with Bashaud Breeland out. And offensively, Kelsey's fantastic. But I just think Tyreek Hill, his speed, and just how you have to have so much attention on him, because if you don't, he can beat you down the field, and he's the best deep threat in the NFL. I think it probably goes that way. Pat's obviously number one. I would say Tyreek Hill's their second best player, and I put Tyron at three just because he makes their defense go.
Carrington Harrison with 610 Sports Radio in Kansas City joining us on the program. Carrington, you guys are in sort of a unique situation there because you're one of the few cities that's going to allow fans in the stadium, I think 22% capacity for this opener against the Texans on Thursday night. Take us inside Kansas City a little bit in terms of what the chatter has been around that aspect of it. Is that viewed as a significant advantage for the Chiefs? Is it viewed as just sort of a kind of some window dressing? What's the chatter been like about the Chiefs allowing fans in the stadium for this opener?
It's not really been viewed as a tremendous advantage. I think it's been kind of looked at as being cool because people want the opportunity to be there whenever they raise the flag on Thursday. So that's kind of been one of the cool things. It's really been split, and it's more based on the ticket prices. Like, the ticket prices are absolutely ridiculous where, I mean, the Chiefs are selling lower-level tickets at $600. And I know we all have different stances when it comes to the virus, but I just don't, like, I just don't want to go to the football game that bad. Like, there's two options. There's either watch the game at the stadium and pay four times what you paid last year, or watch the game for free on NBC. I know which option I would pick.
Well, there's no way to scalp these tickets, right? There's no secondary market because you basically have to show that you're first cousins, at least with the people that are going to the game with you.
I mean, there is a way to scalp it, and that market's really started to drop just because the face was so ridiculous in the beginning. Like, I've never been to Houston Stadium, but I would imagine it's the same way. Like, the cool part of going to Arrowhead is the atmosphere. Yeah. It's the tailgating. It's being around the people. Why would I spend more money to be at a stadium that's only 20% full?
Carrington Harrison from Sports Radio 610 in Houston. Your Twitter handle is C.Harrison, correct? Like,
yeah.
C the letter, then dot, like C. Mm-hmm. Harrison. Okay, .dot. Follow him on Twitter. He's got a good analogy I'm going to bring up here in a little bit. But I want to ask you, I want to take you back to 2017, because I've been reading all these articles about, oh, Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson when they got together at this quarterback camp, or, oh, they're best buds for life, all that. Okay, 2017, you're watching the draft. The Chiefs trade up to the 10th pick. Which of those two quarterbacks were you hoping they took?
I actually wanted Deshaun Watson. I had a belief there that Big 12 quarterbacks, because of how they played the spread and the defense they went up against, couldn't work. If you think about it, Patrick Mahomes is the first Big 12 quarterback to win a playoff game, as wild as that sounds. Think about it. The Big 12 came around in 1996, and Patrick Mahomes was the first, and then Ryan Tannehill was the second last year when they won a playoff game because he played that year quarterback in the Big 12. I just didn't think that it was going to work, and I think a lot of people watched Deshaun Watson in college, especially how he played against Alabama, and you just knew that was going to work. Like, you know how you watch, like, a college basketball player like a Jason Tatum, and you're like, all right, it's just going to translate. Like, I don't care what he did in college. I know it's going to work. That's how I felt about Deshaun Watson when I watched him at Clemson. I'm like, he's going to be a good NFL quarterback. I don't know how great he's going to be, but there's no way that this doesn't work. And I thought him paired up with Andy Reid, especially with what he did with Donovan McNabb and Michael Vick, I felt pretty confident that it was going to work. I just had no clue that Mahomes was going to be the best quarterback of his generation.
Yeah, at what point did that start to show itself, Carrington? Because I can tell you, we could see right away with Deshaun when we were at training camp up in West Virginia in his rookie year. You could tell right away, like, okay, this kid's special. He can sling it. He's tearing up the defense for the Texans as a rookie. And then he did that as soon as he got into a game for the Texans his rookie year. He set all kinds of records. Mahomes, once he took the field for the Chiefs, ended up winning an MVP. But at what point behind the scenes, or did you not know he was going to be this until that opener in 2018 where he was spectacular?
So he started one game in 2017. It was week 17. The Chiefs had everything clinched. They just sat down Alex Smith and they let Mahomes start. And he was okay in the game. He wasn't great, but he was okay. Follow up with the next season, the first game they play on the road against the Chargers, so he's going up against Phillip Rivers. He makes this throw down the sideline to their fullback that just five human beings in the world can make. Then the next week, week two, they played at Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh had always been the Achilles heel for the Kansas City Chiefs with Alex Smith. They could not beat Pittsburgh. He throws six touchdown passes on the road at Pittsburgh. Then follow up week three, they play a home game against San Francisco. And I'm telling you, look this up. He throws one of the greatest passes I've ever seen in my life. Chris Conley in the back of the end zone. He, like Russell Wilson, like scrambles back, turns around, and throws the ball on a rope in the back of the end zone to Chris Conley. At that moment, I knew I was wrong on Patrick Mahomes and that he was going to be fantastic.
So Carrington Harrison from Sports Radio 610, the Kansas City version. If you follow him on Twitter, at C.Harrison. This is a tweet that caught my eye, and I've been thinking about it all morning long. You can make any comparison imaginable if you say a poor man's blank before it. Who were you thinking of specifically when you made that tweet?
I don't even remember. It actually came up. It actually came up on the show a couple of days ago. My co-host said that this KU quarterback, Todd Reesing, that he was a poor man's Johnny Manziel. I'm like, what? Like, no, you're not even close. But, no, that does happen. Like, you can make any ridiculous comparison if you're like, well, he's just a poor man's Scottie Pippen. Like, no, he's not. What are you talking about? Like, your skill set isn't even close to each other.
It's such a nice backhanded compliment slash insult to give to somebody. But now, and I will say, I feel like the backhanded compliments slash insults that you were getting in the replies might mean good things for you in the future, because you got a whole lot of basically C-Dot is a poor man's Nick Wright. A lot of people saying you were a poor man's Nick Wright at that point. Which, if you become a rich man's Nick Wright, that'll mean you'll be as rich as actual Nick Wright.
I don't get called that as much anymore, but you're right. I definitely got called that early on. I was just thinking more about it. I would consider Josh Allen to be a poor man's Cam Newton.
Oh, did you take over for Nick after he came to Houston from Kansas City?
No, not immediately. So Danny Parkins and I, who host in Chicago, we actually were doing 11 to 2, and there was a different afternoon show. And then we moved from 2 to 6, but I actually dropped out of college to be Nick's producer when I was in college. So – yeah, Nick and I are really close, so I understood why I got called to be a poor man's Nick Wright.
Carrington Harrison, 610 Sports Radio in Kansas City.
Soon to be as wealthy as Nick Wright.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. Soon to be an equivalent to Nick Wright, rich version of Nick Wright. Absolutely. Rising star.
You don't sit like crisscross applesauce in your chair like Nick Wright does, do you?
Man, I'm telling you, like, I got so many Nick Wright stories. Like, it was funny because he got that big Chipotle card a couple of weeks ago. And I remember, so I interned for Nick in 2008 and 2009. In 2008, I kid you not, I had Nick Wright's Chipotle order down to a science. Every day at 12:30, he would give me his debit card, and I'd have to go to Chipotle, and I'd have to wait in the line and order his Chipotle. I'm telling you, this was my whole junior year college summer, was ordering Nick Wright Chipotle.
What did he order? Let's judge Nick Wright's Chipotle order.
It was such a long time ago, but he always got – he used to, like, he had to get the burrito double wrapped because all the food would, like, burst out of the burrito if you didn't get it because he had so much stuff in it. I'm telling you, there's not a human being. Like, you don't love anything as much as Nick Wright loves Chipotle. Like, not your wife, not your kids, not beer. I don't know what your favorite things are in life. You don't love them 50% as much as Nick loves Chipotle.
See, now I got to text Nick. Danielle or your new VIP card for Chipotle, Nick? Which one is it? Carrington Harrison joining us on the show. Hey, Carrington, we really appreciate the time, man. Enjoy the week and enjoy the game tomorrow, and we'll catch up again soon. Thank you.
I just want to make one point before I go. Can you imagine if Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys were up 24-0 in a playoff game? lost that playoff game by 20 points. Wow. And nobody blamed the quarterback. That would never happen in the world. somehow this has happened to Houston's quarterback. I just want to figure out why.
We still have people acting like Deshaun played a good game that game. We'll say like that somehow the 9 unanswered touchdowns had nothing to do with the offense not scoring touchdowns.
Hey, Carrington, I'm going to give you 5 quick words as to why. The power of Bill O'Brien. That is why. Lightning rod, baby. Lightning rod.
Nobody loves Chipotle more than Nick Wright loves Chipotle. Nobody criticizes Bill O'Brien quite like Houston fans criticize Bill O'Brien.
There you go. Carrington, great point. We appreciate it. Enjoy your show today, man.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks. Carrington Harrison, good stuff from Kansas City. Yeah, he was looking to fire off that one right there. We never gave him the opening to fire that one off. But like any good host trying to get the masses incited, Carrington Harrison, nice job. 610 Sports Radio in Kansas City. Let's do some headlines, man. Gary, John McClain, top of the hour.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
Before we give you these headlines, we got to give you a code word. We got to give you a code word. The biggest headline of them all, we have a code word to give away an autographed, authentic Brandon Cooks Texans helmet. Write down the code word right now, then listen to In the Loop between 12:45 and 1 p.m. today. They're going to play a cue to call. And caller number 5 with the correct code will win the autographed Brandon Cooks Texans helmet. Today's code word is Watson. That's Watson is the code word. Remember the code word. Set your alarm for this afternoon, 12:45. And by 1 o'clock, you'll hear the cue to call and win an autographed Brandon Cooks helmet with the code word Watson exclusively inside the world's biggest pregame show. 100 hours of Texans Chiefs coverage here on Sports Radio 610. And let's continue with these headlines. And we get started with playoff basketball and the Rockets losing last night to the Los Angeles Lakers, 112-102. Game 3 of that series, the Lakers take a 2-1 lead. And Seth, my contention all along with this series is, you know what? Anthony Davis can get his. LeBron James can get his. Just don't let some rando on the bench or another starter get their
or one of the guys that you least like in the NBA.
Yeah, like Rajon Rondo. Like Rajon Rondo. The Rockets dared Rajon Rondo to shoot the basketball, and boy did he shoot the basketball. He knocked down enough threes to get himself 21 points. I believe the 30 points they had in the third quarter, he was responsible either via assists or scoring them himself for 23 of those points. Rajon Rondo was spectacular last night. He looked like 2008 Rondo, Seth.
Sean, I feel like sometimes the basketball gods punish the Rockets with statistically improbable things. Mm-hmm. It's like whenever the Rockets try to play what you should expect, for instance, like, oh, there's no way in hell you'll miss 25 straight three-pointers. Right. That would never happen. Right. Or, no, there's no way in hell Rajon Rondo will make those shots. That'll never happen. These things always happen in the playoffs.
Leave Lou Dort open. He doesn't hit threes.
Of course. Oh, that's right. Dort. Or yeah, he'll never hit those threes.
The third guy under the age of 21 to hit for 30 in a playoff game. But
the gods of probability are the cruelest gods of them all.
They are the gods of numbers, no question. James Harden said, hey, can't leave Rondo open.
You'd rather Rondo shooting shots than, you know, LeBron and AD, but I feel like we got to make a conscious effort to contest the shots and not just allow him to just shoot it with no space. But, you know, like I said, you can't stop everything. We got to stop or try to stop, you know, their main players and then, you know, not give their role players freely looks and just open shots.
So James basically just said the opposite of what I've been. So like, no, we got to stop their key guys. Oh, yeah, and we got to run guys at Rondo. No, James, you can leave Rondo open, especially in the next game, leave him open, because he's not going to knock down all these shots again. He's not a good shooter.
I'd be careful there, Sean. Gods of probability are already, their ears
screw
are perked.
Screw the gods of probability. Screw them straight to hell.
The gods of probability let the Rockets shoot 40% from three last night, but I find myself living in a world where I say, 30 three-point attempts? Are you crazy? Yeah. You can't win playoff basketball games only taking 30 three-point attempts. That number needs to be doubled at least. But credit the Lakers for realizing, okay, we don't have to play with a center to beat this team. We need to just limit threes as much as possible and just have Rajon Rondo go off.
That's what they're doing.
And then also, but this is where I'm starting to get nervous, Sean. This is two games in a row now where What we saw in the regular season with extreme small ball was that the Rockets simply got worn down and tired, and they looked lethargic, and man, the small ball experiment wasn't working. I feel like these last two games I've started to see evidence of, well, the required energy that it takes to play small ball, the constantly being engaged, just nailing your ball security, creating turnovers, all of that. I don't know if physically this team can withstand that. That's my biggest concern now. And they absolutely 100% have to win this next game. This is not a must-win game mathematically, but look, you're facing a team led by LeBron James. This guy knows how to close out a playoff series.
Yeah.
You can't go down one more game to these guys.
The season's on the line on Thursday night, no question about that. That'll be the night that Game 4 takes place. Also the night that the Texans and the Chiefs take place. It's a big sports night here in the city of Houston. Moving on to the next headline, that other team in Houston, the Houston Astros. Seth, break up the Astros. They won a baseball game yesterday. When you play two baseball games in a day enough times, you're eventually going to win one of these games. And the Astros' six-game losing streak is history. They won the nightcap last night 5-4. They lose the opener 4-2. So they managed to keep their head above the 500 mark thanks to playing two games yesterday, not just one. They are still just two games ahead of the red-hot Seattle Mariners for second place in the AL West. And I believe if the season were to end today, they would still sneak in as the eighth seed in the American League. But, Seth, the Astros are going to need to take advantage of this post-A's schedule coming up to close out the season. This is really the last difficult opponent that they have, the A's, for the rest of the year. And I think they've got a couple games with the Dodgers as well. The schedule is pretty friendly once you get through those games. But the Astros are playing with fire right now. The good news, they win a game last night, and they get Alex Bregman back last night.
They got Bregman back for the first game. Altuve is supposed to be coming back Friday, I think, is what I read in the Chronicle.
Okay.
Yeah, he was running around the bases yesterday, just having a good old time. Was it a workout? No, he was just gleefully running around the bases because he had joy in his heart.
You make him sound like a little kid running through one of those sprinkler systems in the middle of a park.
Somebody came up to him and said, "Hey, kid, you want to run the bases?" And Altuve was like, "Me? Yes, I would." So he ran the bases.
He was reacting to being called a kid because he's over the age of 30 now, the same way I react when I still get carded at a bar every now and then. Look, oh, you think I'm a kid? I'm getting older. Hey, I like that.
Remember the whole thing at the beginning of the season where we were emphasizing that, hey, each game is worth 2.7 games?
Yes.
That six-game losing streak was the equivalent of a 16-game losing streak.
It felt like it, though, didn't it? Yes.
It felt like a 16-game losing streak.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so strange. This time warp that I'm in, just I don't know. I don't know what's up and what's down anymore.
Well, Seth,
it felt like a 16-game losing streak.
You want me to cheer you up real quick? Just know that the Astros are clearly capable of at least a 20-game winning streak. Because they won eight in a row a little bit earlier this month.
It's important to remember, and that's why even at the trade deadline, trying to figure out exactly where any team was or what you might be able to overcome. Because we're humans and we think about the negative first. You know, your first thought was, well, if you have a 10-game losing streak, you're pretty much out of it, right? Well, no, because you can have a 10-game win streak, and it's like winning 30 damn games or 27 damn games.
Yeah.
So they get these guys back. Lance McCullers had an injection in his neck, which sounds just awful, but it should cool off whatever nerve irritation he has there. And I don't know. Maybe there's a light at the end of the tunnel here. We got to get through these. We got to pick up a couple against the A's and then get into these patsies on the schedule.
Now more than ever, my stance is just be healthy on September 27th because I think the math is going to take care of itself. Their schedule easing up. The math will take care of itself. Just be one of the eight best teams in the American League. Have Greinke, McCullers, Fromber healthy. Have your bullpen. Have enough arms in the bullpen to get through a postseason. And have all of your bats, not named Yordan because he's out for the year, but all of your non-Yordan bats healthy and be ready to go. And, Seth, in a world where the Yankees are struggling just as badly as the Astros are, that version of the Astros, especially if Verlander is available to give you innings here and there in the postseason, that's as good enough a chance to win the American League as anything else the American League is going to trot out there. This is what the Yankees are going to be. You know what I mean?
You know, one of our listeners pointed something out, and I think he was the first guy to call me on this, was remember how I had long said that Kyle Tucker just needs a couple of scoops of creatine?
Yeah.
That he's just a little too lanky for
his
own
bigger?
Good. I don't think he looks any bigger. I think his lanky physique is just the right physique.
Oh, is it now?
Yeah. I'm I'm willing to admit when I'm wrong. Nah. Especially this is my lawyer friend from the Woodlands who sends me about 10 emails a day, and he makes some really good points. But I can't always I can't always respond to him. I don't know if he wants me to say his name or not.
Probably has transcripts of everything that you've said so that he can keep you accountable. Being deposed in every show. Probably has transcripts of everything I've said.
He's a retired attorney, and I get the sense that he used to write a lot in his profession. Yeah. So he still writes now. He writes me these long, well thought out emails. But frankly, sometimes it feels like a reading assignment. But he did. I will give him credit. He called me out that my take that Kyle Tucker just needed about 5 to 10 pounds of extra muscle, I was probably way off. And he is one of the fastest. He's one of the fastest outfielders in Major League Baseball, and probably adding the weight wouldn't help him with that.
Yeah, that is true. He is deceptively fast. Next headline.
Whoa, you racist son of a bitch.
No, because he's long and lanky.
Oh, because he's got long
and lanky,
striders.
And his uniform is loose-fitting, and he looks like Ted Williams.
Williams
is not
I thought you were going to tell me he was a lunch pail guy or
something.
Because he's not a lunch pail guy.
No, but
according to A.J. Hinch.
Hang on, let me cross off. Kyle Tucker, grinder. We're not going to do that. We're not going to do that one right there. Kyle Tucker, high baseball IQ.
All
right. Next headline. DeAndre Hopkins. He is already a very wealthy individual. He's going to be even wealthier in years 4 and 5 of his new contract. He gets 2 years, over $54 million tacked on to the 3 years he was already under contract to the Arizona Cardinals. Negotiated the deal himself. He did it without the benefit of an agent. Depending on how you read the story, DeAndre Hopkins is either now the highest-paid non-quarterback in football or, and I think this is the more accurate version, he is now making $18.8 million per year over the next 5 years. Either way, this is good money for DeAndre Hopkins. $42 of the $54 million is guaranteed, so he's going to see most of that money, at the very least, if not all of that money. Seth, is this a deal that you think the Texans and DeAndre Hopkins should have arrived at some point?
Yes, I do. Yeah. And I think that's the important thing to remember, that's $18 million a year. Now, I think there came a time, just like with Jadeveon Clowney, where they were past the point of no return. And I wonder if Bill O'Brien, in trading for Laremy Tunsil and Kenny Stills, kind of calculated how much they were going to get for DeAndre Hopkins in a trade of him. Because reportedly they were already trying to trade DeAndre Hopkins at that point. I think that part of the reason Bill O'Brien thought, oh, okay, we can give up 2 first-rounders and a second-rounder for these two guys because we're going to trade away DeAndre Hopkins at some point, and we'll get a first-rounder back. So I think I think it's possible that he misgauged DeAndre Hopkins' value as well. I don't know. It's not as simple as DeAndre Hopkins wanted more money, so he had to get rid of him. It's that DeAndre Hopkins wanted more money, and Bill O'Brien did not think that DeAndre Hopkins was his type of guy. Those two, if DeAndre Hopkins were a different player, then things might have changed in terms of the DTS stuff.
Does the chain of events that have led the Texans to the roster they have right now, the chain of events, do you include the Brandon Cooks trade in the whole DeAndre Hopkins chain of events? I mean, it sounds like you, in a way, sort of tie the Tunsil trade to it, which I think is a really unique and good way to look at it. Does the Brandon Cooks trade make the DeAndre Hopkins trade, I guess, less of a negative to you? And if they hadn't pulled off the Cooks trade, would we really be looking at this now at a receiving core of Fuller, Cobb, and Stills going, man, what were you thinking here?
Okay, wait, what was the last part?
The last part is if they didn't pull off the Cooks trade, would it have been even more of a disaster, the Hopkins trade? Or does the Cooks trade mitigate some of that because they were at least able to get back a guy who presents a unique challenge and gives them some depth in the wide receiver?
Yeah, it mitigates it a little bit, except that you still didn't get a great value for DeAndre Hopkins. Yeah. And I still don't buy that, nobody would trade him more because, okay, this is what people are saying. Nobody would trade anything good for DeAndre Hopkins because he wanted a new contract. What did the freaking Texans just do? They traded 2 first-round picks for Laremy Tunsil and gave him a new contract. So don't sit here and tell me that nobody would. Anyway, so
okay.
It's going to be. I wasn't yelling at you, by the way, Sean.
Yeah.
Look, Bill O'Brien asked us to wait 3 years to judge the trade, I guess I have to abide by his wishes.
The Texans, by the way, did something historic yesterday. For the first time, teams are allowed to protect players on their practice squad from being picked up week to week. And they chose the 4 they protected. This is interesting. Davin Bellamy, who had a great training camp. Greg Mance, who used to be a starter for this team. Jonathan Owens, who's dating Simone Biles. And C.J. Procise, well-educated running back who has a skill set that resembles, hey, Seth, C.J. Procise, poor man's David Johnson. There you go.
Oh, okay.
How do you like that?
Well, wait, what? Poor man's current David Johnson or poor man's 2016 David Johnson?
Either way.
I don't know what David Johnson is right now.
Yeah.
CJ Pro size might be better than David Johnson at this point. I don't know. If they bench David Johnson for CJ Pro size at some point, I would credit Bill O'Brien for not having too big an ego to see past his mistakes.
Yeah, there you go. So those are the four players they're protecting on the practice squad. Meanwhile, we mentioned Brandon Cooks. He is not practicing this week thus far because of a quad injury. All right,
And the other thing, the important thing to point out about that too is, you know, just because a team wants to sign a guy from your practice squad, it's not like they can pick him up like it's on waivers. The Texans could also make a competitive offer if somebody comes and says, "Hey, we'd like you to sign." I don't know who isn't protected, Chad Hansen. The Texans say, "Hey, Chad, all right, look, how about this? We beat that offer. You can stick with us."
But and the Texans would have to put him on their 53-man roster.
So, right. So. Yeah, no, it doesn't. I mean, they do have some recourse, is all I'm saying.
So
now, the Texans, I guess the only issue would be, at this point, I was about to say something stupid. Let's move on. Let's move on away from my stupidity.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.